From Los Angeles, California, here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, and other organizations for the purpose of improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. This seminar is entitled, How Do You Stop People From Upsetting You? Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about the movement.
I wrote a little note here. I was watching a person the other day do something, and as I watched him do it, I wrote it down, and when I had lunch with them, I said, I want to read you something that you... And they said, fine. And I had written down this. Everything that excites you emotionally and causes you to lose awareness contributes to its growth and to the ultimate death of the real you. Then we say, well, can't I have excitement? You want to die? Then how do I live in that? There's no living in that. But it feels good. A lot of things feel good. Gorging yourself with rich food feels good. The byproduct is death. It's like, well, what about my emotions? That's a good question. What about your emotions? Well, I really can't move on anything unless I feel like it. Tough luck. Must you always feel good before you can move on good? Can't you do things that are right because it's the right thing to do? Can't you discipline yourself not because it feels good, because it's the right thing to do? Sure you can. Sure you can. How do you do this? By spontaneously and intuitively living in the present. And use awareness as your guiding light. By spontaneously and intuitively living, which means you're not going to control the conversation. They'll say this, I'll say that. They'll say this, I'll say that. They'll say this, I'll do that. They say that, and I'll hit them. So I won't say this. I'll do this. Then when they say that, I'll do that. And you call them up on the phone. They say they're not in. You hang it up. You say, well, why aren't they in? I had the conversation all set. You're not spontaneously living. What does that mean? What am I saying in terms of spontaneously and intuitively living? Let go. Let God. When we relax, we let go. When we let God, we spontaneously live in the intuitive nature. And the Spirit comes in and guides us through awareness. Now the old cliche, let go and let God, isn't so far-fetched, is it? Because a lot of people say, well, how do I let go and how do I let God? I say, okay, God, do it, and I'm all upset. Relax. Relax. Be patient. Be patient. Yes, you're waiting on the Lord. Isn't it worthwhile to be patient waiting on the Lord? Yeah, but when's He coming? No, relax. Well, I will if I know when He's coming. Never. Well, then there's no need to try anything. I might as well just give up. Right, relax. So you get negative feedback and can do a positive result by giving it up. People come to me and they have a problem. I say, give it up. I'm saying, relax. Be patient. They sit back and they say, well, I just don't understand that. I go up there with this big problem, and he says, relax, give it up. That isn't going to solve my problem. Okay, then you solve your problem. Oh, well, I don't know how to solve my problem. Then relax. Will that solve the problem? No, but it'll be nice while you're in it. Well, what'll happen then? You won't feel distressful. And you will be able to outlast your problem. Oh. Well, I thought you would just wave your magic wand and it would disappear. I did wave the magic wand and it did disappear. Why are you hanging on to it? Because I want to disappear the way I wanted it to disappear, because it's my problem. Then have your problem. You didn't help me. I came to you for help and you gave me back my problem. Well, I struggled with you grabbing a hold of it and you kept yanking it out of my hand. I started feeling the fool. So I decided I would relax until you're ready to let go of it. And to let go of it means you sit down over there and you walk 20 feet away and then I'll pick it up. Some people are so fast you have to say 30 feet. Because about the time they think you're going to get it, they think it's a pearl of great price and they run back for it and they say, how come I'm back in the same situation? And I say, I don't know. I often wonder about that myself. Why are you back in that? Well, because I thought it was good, somebody else was after it. Well, things are like that, you know. So how do we handle all that? We secretly seek out and hate the wrong in others. And it makes you feel good and clean and energized because you're so righteous. And this egotistical point of view where you set out to destroy evil makes you feel so great and so good that you end up in hell and you didn't even know it. When you love somebody, you love them. When you love a little baby, you love them. When they dirty their diapers, you don't hate them. And you can't hate the dirty diapers or they will be upon you. But neither do you have to sit at the table where they are. And so a lot of things you just say, well, that goes with having this. Driving a big expensive car means sometimes more expensive insurance. If you're going to have the car, there's no need to hate the insurance. You might as well love it because it's all part of it. If you're going to get married, then you're going to become at one with another person. There's no need to hate any part of them. They will magnify and amplify that part you hate to show you, even if you don't tell them you hate it. They will intuitively do that. What would you think of someone if their house got on fire and they ran out and grabbed a 5-gallon can of gasoline and threw it on the fire to put it out? You'd probably think something's wrong with them. You don't put out a fire by throwing gasoline on it. That's right. That you focus towards comes upon you. People focus upon losing weight. And so they focus upon losing weight. And the last word their basic self hears is weight. And they never get around to thinning up. So they're always focusing upon all the food they're eating that they hate, always complaining and moaning and groaning that they haven't lost the weight, always fighting, always struggling, walking by the cookie jar and the pastry shop. And yet, where do they spend their vacation? In front of those things, fighting it. They lost a long, long time ago. What you want more of is what you focus into. What you want more of. You want more happiness? Don't focus upon your despair. Don't focus upon your resentment. That's not happiness. And yet they say, I want to be happy, but I feel so bad. I say, what do you do all the time? Feel bad. So I guess you want that more than happiness. I hate it. I hate it. What do you do? I spend my time hating it. You're a hateful person. That's why I feel so bad. So? But what can I do about it? Be happy. In a hateful situation? No, get out of it. It's burning on your head. There's nothing you can do. You keep throwing gasoline on the fire around you. You keep hating a hateful situation. Then you expect it to be good. It doesn't work that way. Then we try to overcome the bad habit. And you know how we try to overcome bad habits? Well, first of all, maybe we should look at how they happen. We get an emotional stimulation. That emotional stimulation excites us. And we record that in the emotional body. Then we keep trying to reproduce that. And we do our body rituals, our habits, to reproduce that excitation, to keep feeling that. And we keep going over and over until it becomes mechanical, methodical. Then we try to break it by stopping it. What you have to do is to find something that will excite you as much as that original response and change it at that moment. So what's the best thing? The thing that stimulated you in the beginning. Somebody hurts your feelings. And to solve that, you keep going back over the conversation over and over and over and over and over until the conversation keeps going over and over and over, and you're depressed by what they've said that keeps playing over and over in your mind. Now, if things are right and proper and God is in his kingdom, you are, aren't you? Yes. Yes. Why would he set up that procedure to go over and over and over? Because the very procedure by which happens to you, how you get into it, is the very same procedure how you get out. We call it psychoanalysis. We go back to you and analyze what happened so you can see clearly what happened and get out of it. So do it to yourself to start with. We don't solve the problem by going back over and back over and back over the hurt. We solve it by going to see what it is and say, aha, there's the hurt, and we turn and face the other direction. And we step clear. Then we step back and we look and we say, I see how I set myself up for that. I don't have to do that anymore. Then we say, now you're getting smart. Now you're learning. Then when something else happens again, we say, well, I'm in this problem. I keep going over and over and over. I keep going back and seeing that same guy. He does the same thing. I go over and over. I try to get away. I go away from him. It comes with me. It goes over and over. I go back to him. For what reason? To get out of it. That's why you go back. To see what it is. And you go back and you observe what they do to you, how they push your button. And then when they go to push your button, you say, deflect. And then they go crazy. And you stand there and watch them freak out. You say, it's interesting. When I didn't freak out, they did. Huh. And all along, I thought they were in control. It's just they hadn't had their moment on the stage. Now it's their time to entertain. How interesting. Going back over the problem and over it does not clear the problem. It ingrains the problem. We must get above the problem. Then we can observe the problem, and that observation allows us to spontaneously live in a state of intuitive awareness, and we can relax and be patient because it's all fine. Letting go and letting God. But we must be that instrumentation for our own good. We must cooperate. We must work with it. So we go and we see an old friend we haven't seen for a long time. And the last time we saw him, there was this emotional haranguing and the hurt feelings. And then we meet up with him again on that strange day. And we think, maybe this is a good thing. And before you know it, you're back in the same emotional haranguing. How do you handle that? There is no way to handle that while you're in that. But prior to that moment, you observe the action. And you say, instead of me reacting, I will observe that that goes on. And that's called practice. And how are you going to have the practice unless you get occasions in which to practice? So you set yourself up many times in life to these occasions so you can practice your technique of observing, so you can get free when that trauma reappears. You observe it. And at that moment, you have mastered the situation. But if you gloat and you flaunt the mastership, your ego takes over and your pride pushes your nose in it. Then you have to eat at what was prepared at the table in the presence of your enemy. Who likes that? I'm not too sure very many people do. We have a few choices in life. One choice is to choose righteousness. And when we do choose righteousness, we can no longer entertain the spirit of wrong, the spirit of wrongdoing inside of us will be pointed out to us by everyone. And then we feel so bad that we're so bad. You're not. You have just entertained a spirit of error. And when you sit back and relax and you start taking stock of it, and often a good way is to independently write down on paper so you can observe it out there. You get it out from you and you observe the process. And you say, by doing all these things, this bad thing will take place. And by doing all these things, all this bad things will take place. Then you determine whether you want to do the bad thing. And if I do all these things, this good will take place. And if I do all these things, this good will take place. And what is the reward for bad? Since it's bad, it can only produce bad. So there's no way out. And what is the reward for doing good? It can only be good, and that is its own reward. And so you live in a state of goodness because that's the place to live, for no other value. I never understood once a long time ago, I read a statement that said, virtue is its own reward. And I thought, how trite. How trite. Virtue is its own reward. The thing of it is, I didn't know what was virtue. Not being unvirtuous, I'd never had a chance to look at it. And I started observing people who did not have virtue in them, who had agony, and who had pain, and who had all sorts of disturbances. My God, they were hell on wheels. Everywhere they went, they had this portable hell that just hurt them. And I looked at them, I thought, if you just didn't have all of that, you'd feel good. And that would be good enough, just to feel good. And then it dawned on me, sure, virtue is its own reward. Absolutely. Good is its own reward. There's nothing else to have but that. Once you have that, what else is there? Ego gratification, pride, greed, lust? No, those are virtueless situations. So when you have virtue, you release the whole process and you let it go and you sit there free. And you feel contented. You don't have guilt. And you don't have hurt feelings. And you don't have fear of discovery. And you don't have fear of this or fear of that. And that good feeling, believe me, is God. Then you say, what else is there? And so then you work to maintain that. But how can you maintain something that is beyond your grasp? By observing what comes into you, spontaneously being alive, listen to the intuitive nature of your beingness, and let the awareness of life come into you, and from your past mistakes and the grief and the irritation, you have learned. And that pointing out of the error in you frees you, because you hurt so bad, you turn from it. And that's when we say, when you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, you'll change. And often it takes that drastic moment inside of us where we give it up and we actually fall back in a completely submissive state and we say, oh God, I've had it, I can't do it, it's beyond me, and we cry, and we really cry. And we cry so hard that there's not even any more tears left. And we even give that up. And we're so totally exhausted, nothing can hang on to us. We can't even move. And then, maybe, we've entered relaxation. And at that moment, we start becoming filled with the Spirit. At that moment, you must demand of Spirit. How do you demand of Spirit? Give it to me. No. That's a commandment. A demand is when, let me give you an example. When you're tired and you lie down to rest to get your energy back, Spirit does not see a demand. It says, I see less need of energy. They're doing nothing. And takes away even that you have. And when you're tired, you think, I've got to go to bed and get my rest. Run around the block first. Run around the block fast. Run around that block vigorously, and you'll be so filled with energy you can't go to bed. Because Spirit has fulfilled your demand, but not your commandment. A demand is an action that's placed out there. People say, well, can I demand of Spirit more to help me pass my bar examination? I say, yes, if you demand of it. And they say, what do? I say, you open those books and you read it. And Spirit will come right through there and match with you. And if you put it under your pillow and sleep on it, Spirit goes away to where it's needed and wanted. And that's what I mean when I say you demand against it. Some of us demand against the food. And we demand inside of ourselves, and we fill ourselves up with food energy. And we don't use it. And if we would get up and demand of Spirit, we would start running, and that breath of life would come right into us, and we start energizing ourselves, and we use the energy of food for the body, and we use the energy of Spirit for ourselves. But we must demand of it by doing those actions that put Spirit on notice that you're involved with it. When you pray to God and you command God, God, give me this, God, give me that, God, give me this, God, give me that, he says, who are you? You're just a sergeant. I got all sorts of people ranking above you. But when you pray, you get out and demonstrate the need, and Spirit supplies it. And often, all we have to do is confess it out loud. I need a job. By putting that out to somebody or writing a note to them, we are starting to demand against that. And often it takes a while because we think it should come in when we think it should, instead of letting it come in when it's going to. But it won't come in if you demand of it. So you go to bed so tired, and you haven't done anything all day long, and you lay in bed and you toss and turn all night long until finally, early in the morning, you fall asleep. Why? What happened? You had to wear yourself out so Spirit could put the energy in to relax you. And so that tossing and turning was your physical exercise before you could get to sleep. Get up and do jumping jacks or push-ups. Get up and do a lot of that, a lot of exercise till you're really tired. When you're honestly tired, and you then rest, Spirit places itself with you, and you have the oneness, and you fall into rest. Other than that, you're always separated because you're dealing with the food energies of the body and the neglect of the mind and the procrastination and the emotions. And then you say, why can't I sleep? Say, you have not demanded of sleep. So I go to bed. I've been in bed all day long. I know. It's not sure what time you want to go to sleep. Then you only go to bed, and you only go onto that bed and lie down when you are intent to entire sleep all night long. You don't do it all day long. You sit in a chair. You lie down someplace else, and you never lie down your bed for relaxation. That's for sleep. And it works. And it works more and more the more you work it, the more you get out and demand of it. If you're after money for a motion picture film and you demand a spirit, that means you start knocking on the doors and you start going to the people and you start talking to them and you start presenting to them and spirit fills it. And then they recognize the spirit and they join. And that's what you wanted all along. But if you think, well, they're supposed to see that it's good. Oh, are they? That's rare that anybody sees anything good. They have to be sold on it good. You say, well, it's pretty good, and I think you'd enjoy it. It's nice. What's the demand? Well, can't you see the demand? No, you're submitting. Yelling doesn't do it. It is that energy inside of you that moves you into it. Then it supplies itself. We have to have the wit, because it's not all just invisible spirit. We have this cohesive spirit that we can look at. It has to respond. And the more we respond to that eminence of spirit, the more we enter into it and become the divine counterpart of our own beingness, and we live in both planes simultaneously. But we must continually work the level that is to be worked and exist in the level that is to be existed in. Spirit is existence. The physical level is work. Beirush Beishan.
John Rogers' closing words were Beirush Beishan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.